Oak Session number 13264, Reel 2.
Mr. Morris, Reel 2, you were just telling me that you assume that this chap must have been killed.
Well, I would assume so, because it just stopped, you see. I wrote to the same address, like, but I never got no answers.
When you jumped down, did you have to jump down onto the destroyer?
Jumped down onto it, yeah.
Was it far to jump?
No, not far. And they'd got prepared as much as they could with the mattresses and palliasses on the deck to jump on, like, you know. And there was plenty of tea on the go, and bully beef and jam. Bread and jam.
Did many people lose their lives, do you think, during the sinking?
Well, there was a few, but unfortunately, one lifeboat went down off the davits, and some silly sons hadn't put the bungs in the bottom of the lifeboat. When she took water, she turned over and tipped all the nurses out.
It had women in, did it?
Oh, yeah. There was, well, the women went first, like, after we pulled the officers out of the way. They were going to go first. The high-ranking officers, they were going to go first, but we slung them out of the way and put the women in.
Army or Navy officers?
Well, I wouldn't like to... I don't like to commit myself as far as that, because I knew someone personally. And we got them, instead of letting them get a lifeboat, we slung them over the side.
Slung the officers over the side?
Yeah. Well, I mean, officers don't make no difference to me, like...
Do you think they survived?
Oh, I should think so, because there's plenty of boats out, like... But the Alaskan crew had gone with our lifeboats, you see. When we got to the lifeboats, there was no lifeboats there, they'd gone. It was an Alaskan crew and they just took the lifeboats and sugar roughly.
Americans?
Alaskans, aye. But then the minute the torpedo struck, the Royal Navy captain took over, you see. He took charge of the ship.
How many officers did you throw over the side?
No, about a couple of dozen, I think. There was going about sitting on the stick, you know, the walking sticks. Sitting on the walking sticks, giving orders out and says, you don't give no orders out to us, lads. I remember one as a rifle brigade captain. Well, it was a major, actually. With a black button, I also remember him. So I just kicked his walking stick and then slid into the water. There was privates dressed as colonels and it was comical.
What do you mean privates dressed as colonels?
Well, they got coats and that off other people, you know. Because they had no coats of their own, you see, and they was getting coats off anybody.
So they might have been privates dressed up as officers?
Oh, yeah, that's quite true, yeah. Could have been. Well, I wasn't unduly bothered because I got in a stoker's mess. And one of them said to me, he didn't know me, like, he said, "Now then, Paddy," he said, "he fancied a drop of rum." I said, "Are you kidding? Come in here." So I got a few of my pals together and we all went to this little cubbyhole. We got a jar of rum, Navy rum. Well, I thought if we're going to go down, might as well go down happily. Because we was only kids, 19 or 20.
Who was it who threw these officers into the sea? Was it the...
We did.
Your unit?
Yes, that's some of all of us, yeah.
But... the women went first, did they?
They did do eventually, but the officers would have gone first if we'd have let them. But we slung the officers out of the way and put the women in the boats. Then when it went down, somebody forgot to put the bung in, or bungs, and she took water and turned over. But none of them got lost because we dropped the scrambling nets down straight away, see. The scrambling back up again.
But do you think they were really officers or people who were...
Oh, no, genuinely officers. Then that were slung over.
So they were army officers, not navy officers?
Mainly army officers. No, because the Royal Navy, they was in charge, you see, they was all working. I remember this RB major saying something to a young sailor. So the young sailor said to him, "Now look," he said, "we're in charge now, not the army, not the bloody army. And he kicked his walking stick from under his bottom leg and he went down. That's where you were, you said, in the drink. Man, it wasn't bad sea, like, I mean, it wasn't drowned. It wasn't cold or anything like that. It was 2 o'clock in the morning, it wasn't all that cold.
How are these women behaving whom you put in the boat?
Oh, they were very well behaved, very well behaved. We were all singing some "You're My Sweetheart" and the lights was bobbing up and down on the boat, like, on the lifebelts.
You were singing what to them?
"You're My Sunshine." As well as other things, like. Oh, the lights was bobbing up and down like we started singing.
Which lights were these?
On the lifebelts. The lights that come on when you go in the water. They was all bobbing about. It looked really good.
Why were you singing that?
I don't know why. We should pick that song so.
Any other incidents that you remember during the abandoning of the ship?
No, I know when she caught fire. And in the finish, the Royal Navy put her down, sunk her. But you could still see for long enough after, you could see the hulk. Everybody used to remark on when they come out, "Did you see the ship?" "Oh, I was still there." It was, you know, it was beach-like. It was still there, like. Because you're a big ship. There was a staff out and a staff there. There was a lot of staff. Good few of them.
How long do you think you were in the ship after it had been torpedoed? Before you got off onto the Panther?
Oh, about 8 or 9 hours, I would imagine. Because she just listed, you see. She was like that. And she wasn't going to go down because we had to put her down ourselves in the finish. As a danger to the shipping, you see. The Royal Navy had to send a couple of ships out to torpedo her to make her get down, like, you know. Well, I say she never stuck fully submerged, it was stuck out of the water.
So you were on it all that time?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was no bother, like. We were having a good enough time.
What were you doing during the 8 or 9 hours?
Well, as much as we could, we were drinking as much as we can and sleeping. Drinking and sleeping.
Did you think you'd not be able to get off?
Oh no, we had every confidence we'd get off, like, with the Navy.
Were there other ships about besides the Panther?
Oh no, they just carry on. No, the Panther come out from Oran. No, the convoy just carries on. They don't stop for you. Well, they can't stop because they're sitting targets and stuff, aren't they? So they just carry on and you wave goodbye, like. But nobody panicked, like.
Did you lose everything?
Everything I had. Every single thing. Kept back the lot. All I had was my cap. And I've still got the cap badge now.
And you say you got good treatment aboard the Panther?
Oh, excellent. Absolutely excellent. You know, there's talking to you, the officers, just really good, nice fellas. Well, of course, they'd been to be, no doubt, themselves, like, sometime. Some of them, like.
Where did the Panther take you to?
Algiers.
What happened to you there?
Oh, then we got back into the army again, like, army camp, sure. We went to Mason Carey, I remember where I went first time.
To where?
Mason Carey. That was the first place we went to camp.
Was this still with the Liverpool, King's Liverpool Irish?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
The 8th Battalion?
Yeah, the only other one was telling you.
And then what happened to you?
Well, I got sent up the line then as reinforcements for Brigade HQ. Which I thought, well, this is a good job, Brigade HQ, like, not so bad here. You were still in the land, like, but you was, you know, a bit further back. But that didn't last long.
Which brigade was that?
That's the 8th, Irish Brigade. There were three battalions of the Ulster Rifles. No, not the London Irish Rifles. Royal Enniskillen Fusiliers and Royal Irish Fusiliers. And they was all in the one battalion, one brigade, which was the 38th Irish Brigade. 78th Div.
Whereabouts were they? Where was the brigade HQ?
They were in the LAN.
But whereabouts in the LAN?
Well, the furthest forward they got was just outside. You know, when they were finished up anyway. Because we got into Chunas before Christmas, you know, we couldn't stop there. There was no reinforcements. Was, the lines was 500 miles, you see.
How long were you with this Brigade HQ?
Only a matter of days, and then they sent this reinforcement to the Skins. The Skins had lost a lot of men, so we got out of that into the Skins regiment, and I was with them right the way through.
So you were only with the Brigade HQ for a short time?
Oh, only days.
What you were supposed to be doing with them?
Was supposed to be reinforcement for any of their debt, you know, anybody got killed or wounded. But then the Skins lost a lot, so they sent all our drafts there.
Which battalion of the Royal Enniskillen Fusiliers was this?
6th.
Do you remember which company you were in?
I was in B Company.
How did you find this battalion?
Oh, quite nice kids, quite decent sort of lads. Rough and ready, but those nice kids.
Which part of the world did they come from mostly?
Well, it was all over the world. There was English, Irish, Scotch, Cockneys, all sorts. But basically, when it first started, they were all, initially, all Irishmen. Because it was volunteer, you see, at first. And then, of course, he got detailed where to go to after that. But it was basically, and the officers were smashing blokes.
In what way?
In every way. And they got plenty of guts and all. They wouldn't ask you to do anything they wouldn't do themselves. They were real good lads.
Do you remember any of the officers?
Oh, I remember all of them.
Can you name any of them?
Yes, Colonel Kerr, Johnny Kerr. He went abroad as a platoon sergeant major, and he finished up as colonel of the regiment, MSC. A thorough gentleman. And then there's another one, he finished up Major General Breeden. Well, I've seen him since, he was a real nice fella.
Is this Bala Breeden?
Bala Breeden, yeah. He got smacked through this leg.
His left leg?
Just after Casino. And he said, why, the lousy rotten backswards. I said, well, what's the matter, sir? He said, they smacked me in the other bloody leg now. And he was stood there with his shorts down. And he was doing this leg, then he had to do this one as well. That was a smashing block. He was, at first he was in, what do they call them? Long Range Desert Group. There was more or less the round bosses, like, you know. But he took over the Skins, and then he took over London Irish. And then he got to be a Major General. He only just finished last year. 33 years in the army.
Were you a private in the 6th?
I was a private and I went up to Sergeant Major.
Where did you have your first fighting with them?
In North Africa.
But whereabouts?
Around about Tunis, Longstop, around there. Because it was all hills, like, that's all there was out there, it was only hills.
Can you describe the first fighting that you were in as an infantryman?
Yeah, it was a bit rough. But we had a good sergeant and he looked after us. Sergeant McAlee, he got a DCM. And funny enough, talking to him over the Christmas time, he went to school with my own mother in Dungannon. It was queer, that was.
But what was the fighting like at this place?
Well, it was all up, all on hills, like, and that. There was no flat ground at all there. It was all up hills and down dales and rivers and all the rest of it.
But was there any hand-to-hand stuff?
Oh, yes, oh, yeah. The officer was hand-to-hand, so. It was either you or him, and that was it at the end of it. Also, I was not hand fighting in Italy.
But no, this was North Africa.
And North Africa, yeah. But I consider myself very lucky because I was in the infantry from all the time, and there weren't many that was in the infantry 5 years. Very few that lasted 5 years.
How did the Germans fight in Tunisia?
Oh, quite good, quite good. And as I say, as far as I'm concerned, there were gentlemen and there were bloody good scrappers. But there was fair. They didn't do a lot of lousy tricks like the so-called Japs did. Man, I've got into trouble for saying there was decent blokes like myself, but that's what I think. And I would never willingly massacre Germans or anybody else. A lot of lads delighted in killing them, but I didn't.
Why did they delight in killing them, do you think?
Well, they thought it was big, you know. But maybe I was a little bit biased because I had a brother who was a prisoner of war. So if I could take a prisoner, I would take a prisoner rather than kill him. I mean, a lot of you used to throw grenades in the trenches and that. But I could never do that because it was deliberate, I thought. Give a fighting chance.
But by giving them a fighting chance, were you risking your own life?
Well, you could have been, but that's just a risk you take, isn't it? You see, I'm a fatalist. If my name was on a bullet or whatever, if it was for me, I'd get it. Well, there can't have been one with my name on.
Did you get wounded in North Africa?
Yeah, on my birthday, 21st birthday.
When was that?
22nd of April.
43,
yeah.
What happened?
I got a great big piece in my back, right, so my webbing belt. It hadn't been from a webbing belt, so it had come out the other side. It had come out the front. Because the webbing belt was very, very thick, you know.
But where were you and what happened?
Well, to tell you the honest truth, I'd just been for a doda behind the haystack.
To defecate?
Yeah. And as I was running to get to the back to the lads, this bloody thing smacked me right in the back. What the hell, didn't I? It was red hot, like, you know. Anyway, fortunately, they pulled it out and I only went to the MI, so I didn't go to hospital. They just bandaged it up and I went there again next morning.
Whereabouts in Tunisia was this?
In the region of Longstop, which was one of the big battles there.
Was it a bullet or...?
No, it was a shrapnel. A whacking great piece of shrapnel. Probably most of them.
What kind of treatment did you get for that?
Well, they just took us out, took the shrapnel out, and, you know, I should imagine iodine or whatever. I put a bandage on and I went for 2 or 3 days to the MI hut, MI sergeant. And they just used to clean it and put a new bandage on and go back up again.
Did you carry on then?
Oh, yeah. Oh, you had to be bad to get out of the line. You wanted your leg off your arm to get out of the line.
Did you ask to be taken out of the line?
No, I wasn't bothered, no.
How much pain were you in?
Oh, not an awful lot. It just momentarily, like, really. And then it happened, it hurt a bit more when they took it out, you know, found some more pieces and took them out.
Any other incidents that happened to you in North Africa with the Innis killings?
No, not in North Africa, Italy, but not North Africa.
Were you in the Sicily landings?
Yeah, Century EP.
Can you describe what happened to you in the Sicily landings? Which ship you went in and so on?
Oh, I can't remember the ship, no idea the ship. It was a troop ship, that's all I know.
But this was with the 6th RIF?
I was with the 6th, yeah. When I come out of them, I went to the 2nd, but that was later on in Italy.
Did you land actually on D-Day in Sicily?
Oh, yeah.
Was it opposed?
No, very little, very, very little.
What did you do on landing on the beaches?
Oh, I just joined your units and carried on with them, that was it.
When did you first run into the opposition in Sicily? Enemy opposition?
Oh, within about 2 days. We went to find them, like, you know. We took Centuripe, that was our biggest deal there.
Where?
Centuripe, they called it Cherry Ripe. C-E-N, Centuripe. It was a good deal.
Why did they call it Cherry Ripe?
Well, because they call it Centuripe and all the lads used to call it Cherry Ripe. That was the name given to it. It's in the books, like, isn't it?
What was the fighting like there?
Well, very rough, but very short term. It was only a short period. It was only about a fortnight. It was all finished in a fortnight.
Which was the worst, the fighting at Cherry Ripe or at Longstop?
Well, I was definitely Longstop. Because it was elevated, it was Longstop.
Why was it much worse than Cherry Ripe?
Well, that's a long one for a start. See, the war in Sicily was all started and finished within 14 days. Where North Africa, it was 6 months. And long drawn out, horrible weather and mud and all the rest of it.
Did you come across the Americans, either in Tunisia or...
Oh, yes, oh, yes. Well, they landed with us in Tunisia. It was supposed to be their dough. But the least said about the Americans, the better.
Why?
Well, I haven't thought of time for them. I never did have. There's no discipline. And where we would send 30 people, they would send 130. And that's why, consequently, why they got more killed. Because there's no discipline whatsoever. And too well looked after. We may have been the same if we'd been as well looked after as they were. I mean, there's getting ice cream in the front line and milk and sugar and all the rest of it.
In what ways were they?
Well, these are like fighting cocks. They eat absolutely well looked after. In all ways, food, cigarettes, tobacco, everything. And far too much money. But the discipline was absolutely nil. I mean, I saw a bloke, Field Marshal Alexander, come up to him, and he just said, "Hi there." Well, I was incensed. I was really annoyed. I went up to him and said, "What the bloody hell are you talking to?" I said, "That's our boss." "Ah," oh, he said, "he's only a army officer." Well, to me, it was the king, was Alex had gone out for him. I liked him far better than Monty.
Why was that?
Well, he was a gentleman among gentlemen. Far better behaved. He wasn't a barber puncher like Monty was. Because Monty wasn't very well liked, you know, by the ordinary soldier. Barber puncher, he didn't use to smoke, he didn't use to drink. He was to go to bed every night about 10 o'clock. Because he had somewhere to go to bed too as well.
He had what?
He had somewhere to go to bed too. He'd always had his caravan with him.
But in what ways was Alexander better then?
Well, he's a man's man. And a thorough gentleman. If he could do anything at all for you, if he was a private soldier, whatever he was, he would do it for you. Mariokin, like, was a good fellow, no?
But do you think the other soldiers shared your opinion about Alexander rather than Montgomery?
The majority of my pals did, definitely. Well, there was nearly a riot in Italy when they made Monty Field Marshal, you know, in front of Alexander, and then they had to backdate Alexander, so he was a Field Marshal before Monty was. The lads nearly went on strike in Italy. The least I've ever seen, I didn't think chaps used... thought that much about officers, but by hell it is.
Did you join in that?
I would have joined in, yeah. He was a good lad, was the best of us, I thought.
But how did the soldiers show their feelings about it?
Oh, they're telling us, they were talking about having a strike. Because it was that incensed that he got made up, senior to Alexander.
Whereabouts was that, that they were talking about a strike?
Well, just about the time when they got made up, I can't just remember what month that was. But they was that incensed. And that Mark Clark, well, he was the right son, sir. He deliberately ignored Alexander's orders, deliberately. He was determined to get into Rome first. It didn't matter what expense it was, he wanted to get Rome. Well, he took the boat home with him anyway, Roma. He put it on his ranch. He had more regard for the men's lives, did Alex.
In Sicily and Italy, did you have much to do with the local people?
Oh, yeah, quite a lot, yeah. Mostly in Italy. So we went in Sicily, then. It was only there about 4 days. About 3 weeks altogether in and out.
How did you get on with the Italians?
Oh, quite well, quite well.
Were they friendly or hostile?
Mainly friendly. Well, the best people I got on with altogether was the Austrians. They were great people, the Austrians.
In what way?
In every way, looking after you and being friendly with you and doing things for you and everything.
That was right at the end?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of them, well, the majority was Catholics, which suited me because I was Catholic. And of course, most of the Irish regiments are Catholics, the CO and all the rest of them. Because we went to see the Pope himself 4 days after Rome fell. Because our padre had served some of his time in Rome. So he whipped into the Vatican and made an appointment to see the have an introduction to the Pope, plate, which was only 4 days after Rome fell.
Where did you do most of your fighting in Italy?
Well, the hardest, Cassino.
Can you describe what it was like at Cassino?
Oh, it was hell on earth. I mean, there's thousands of tons of bombs fell on there. In fact, they bombed it that much, that they bombed it so much for us, we couldn't get into the place, we couldn't get tanks in. You could hardly get men in the man tanks because they bombed it that much. They bombed it day after day after day, you know. Liberators, fortresses, flying fortresses, everything. I've got a book in there to tell you all about it. But
were you in the 6th or the 2nd battalion at Cassino?
The 6th. Well, didn't join the 2nd while we left Italy to go to Egypt for a rest.
Whereabouts at Cassino was your battalion?